This is The Express with Gary Allen, your 360-degree view of the world. Now, here's your host, Gary Allen.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to this episode of The Express. Gary Allen with you. We've got a great show for you, but before we get onto that, because I know my guest is on the line, I just want to say hello to Randy and to all of you out there. Take a few minutes out of your day to join us here on The Express on this extraordinary, I don't know what the temperature is like where you folks are, but man, it was like 95, over 100 degrees here in Florida today. It was hot. I got to tell you, it was so hot I saw a tree, thank a dog. That's an old Johnny Carson line, so I can use that. But anyway, thank you all very much for taking the time to join us here on The Express. As I said, we have a very interesting guest with us tonight. Her name is Michelle Brunetti. She coins herself as a conscious living coach. She believes that human beings can learn to move beyond their biological and basic primal instincts by reprogramming the unconscious thoughts that they have learned over the course of their life. She has done copious amounts of research in the areas of biology, anthropology, neuroscience, philosophy, psychology, spirituality, and she is also got something that's called The Power of You. She got a BA degree undergraduate in journalism and a master's degree in psychology. And I'm very pleased to have this young lady with us tonight because she also happens to have a bit of a show business background. So that's always cool. So would you please welcome to us, and I'm very pleased to have her with us, Michelle Brunetti. I always want to say Bertinelli, hey. But it's Brunetti.
Yeah. Hi.
Welcome to The Express. I'm fine. I mean, I'm okay. I was watching this election in Ohio. Boy, it's close. It's close in a district where Republicans should tear it apart, but he's not. Other than that, it was 95, felt like 104 degrees here today in Florida. What was it like for you down in L.A.?
Actually, it was muggy. It felt like we were in the South. It's super humid and a little bit warmer than that, you know, normal. So it was walked outside. It was like, whoa, where am I? What's happening here? But it's always beautiful in Southern California. So, you know, we can't complain. We really shouldn't complain, but we do.
Yeah. I remember when I lived there, everybody complained about everything. I always remember the one weather guy, and I can't remember. I think he was with NBC, and he used to talk about onshore flow. She's coming in, you know, and stuff like that. He was also a stand-up comic, and I forget exactly who it was. Let's talk a little bit about what is conscious living, and how did you become a coach?
Well, conscious living is a state. It's achieved through what I call mindful discipline. It helps us move beyond our biology and the basic primal instincts that nature wired us with. When we're living consciously, we've learned how to live in a more deliberate and mindful state. It's an egoless state where we release judgment and stop comparing ourselves to others, which can separate us and create unhappiness. I also think that living consciously shows us how to rewire our brains, pushing past our unconscious barriers and conditioning, so we can become actors in our lives and not just reactors. Not that, you know, here in LA, everybody is an actor, but I teach the opposite. I teach people, you know, how to live in the moment, live in the now. When we achieve the state, we learn how to stop letting the past keep us stuck in old negative stories or allowing our fears to keep us from moving forward and living in a state of self-acceptance. It's really all about living in the present, being in the now, and consciously choosing what we want to focus on each and every moment. We wake up each day, Gary, and choose what clothes to wear. Why not choose what thoughts we want to create, you know, in order to make ourselves experience inner happiness?
Yeah, true. You know, I was thinking about this the other day, and I told you I always come up with what I call blue-collar questions. You know, when we are born, and we're going to get into this more and more as we move through the program. We're not born with an instructional booklet. Parents are not given one when they become a mom and a dad. Children don't get one when you're born. You don't get one when you go to school. You don't get this. You don't get that. So you have to naturally learn from the people that were ahead of you. And I think in our society today, more so than it was, say, back when I was a teenager or in my 20s, Some of the role models that we have out there are based on the fact that we have children having children, and they haven't grown up themselves, and they haven't experienced life. Nowadays we want people to grow up quickly. I mean, you have kids before they're even out of the womb, the parents are deciding what school they're going to go to, and a lot of things are. But what do we do about, like for instance, in the schools now, we have all these school shootings, people not taking responsibilities for their own actions. Our leaders are pointing to others and claiming they're the fake news, but I'm telling you the truth. Don't believe what you hear and what you see, only what you hear and see from me. Is that a large part of living in the conscience that you have to take responsibility for yourself and start respecting others as well?
You know, the end of civilization probably won't be from another ice age, Gary. I think it's going to be from our global lack of consciousness. We're thrilled to get new iPhones and other cutting-edge technology, but not so much about creating a peaceful and compassionate world, which must start from within. When people get together and they decide, to get married, how much do they really talk about their values as parents? What their background is, how they feel about being a parent, who will be the good guy and the bad guy as far as discipline. I think that we are so unprepared to have children. And people always say, well, you know what? I did the best I could, blah, blah, blah. But, we can do better. We can do better by first developing a healthy core relationship with ourselves, kind of going back and, rewiring some of the stuff that we don't even know we're doing unconsciously. And then when we meet a partner and we decide to co-parent, we're coming together, as two people that have their shiitake mushrooms together. I'm not sure if I can swear on the show, so I won't. But I think where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
We have to have a really strong sense of who we are if we want to bring good people into the world and teach them how to be good, solid, strong, healthy people.
Yeah, as you're saying that, I remember seeing something on Facebook the other day. Someone was complaining about something or another, but her argument was, look, I have a master's degree and a PhD in something, but that doesn't necessarily, she says, I'm educated, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm street smart. What you're saying, I think, is important. People come together and they fall in love and they get married. And I've always said, now I didn't get married until I was 33 years old. Met my now late wife, Grace, on I was performing at the Improv, which is, that oh too well. You've been there. She was heckling from the audience. But Grace was 36, I was 33. We lived a little bit of life, but we still had growing pains when we got together, and there were still mistakes that we had made. Do you think a lot of this has to do with the fact, again, that children are having children, and while they're growing up faster, they're still not growing up the way they should be? I've been a firm believer in let children be children, let them grow up, let them go through the growing pains, let them have the interaction with other kids. This stay-at-home stuff, going to school, being taught at home by mom or a cousin or an aunt or something, I'm not for that at all. Do you think there's a step that's been missing for years as far as, grow up, grow up, grow up, grow up? What do you want to do? What do you want to be? But at the same time, when you reach that 19 or 20, you're really not grown up for the most part. There are those that are, but there are very few of those, and that's part of the problem. They haven't learned their lessons, so how can they impart anything on the children that they're having?
Yeah. I think biology kind of screwed us over when it comes to this whole timeline of having kids. I mean, nature says, well, you have to have, you're fertile here, you're ready here at this point biologically, but we are nowhere near ready emotionally, spiritually, and any other way to really raise kids if we haven't really grown up, if we really haven't lived some life, and more importantly, lived life mindfully. If we take the time, if every young person was taught early on, how to meditate, how to be compassionate, how to, learn how to love themselves and develop this kind of systemic self-esteem, mm-hmm. I think that when they get to the point of having children, they'll actually have a good blueprint. You know what I mean? They'll have a mindful plan to raise children that are compassionate. You know, humankind has a difficult time with the idea that we're arguably animals who wear clothes, because we believe that we are civilized and dominate over nature and our environment. Aristotle defined the human being as the rational animal. I prefer to call man the thinking animal. You know, it's pretty acceptable that primates diverged from other mammals about 85 million years ago. Mm-hmm. Whether you believe in evolution or special creation, you know, we all can agree that we are basically just animals in clothes. And if you also understand anything about, you know, Carl Jung and his idea of the shadow, he has something what he calls the collective shadow, which is the darkness in society. And we're seeing this just permeate more and more. There's more violence. I don't want to get political, you know, and make this into a political thing, but there's so much, you know, a permission now to delve into that darkness of our society, to be racist, to be, you know, homophobic, to be mean. And unfortunately, this is going to trickle down into this next generation of children if we don't find some way as parents, as mm-hmm. uncles, aunts, grandparents, strangers, you know, raising, it takes a village, right? To mm-hmm. try, teachers, to try to, you know, get to a place where we can teach people how to be compassionate, to not look at people across the world as strangers, but as people like ourselves who have mm-hmm. common values, common wants, and who, you know, who ultimately just want to live a peaceful, happy life.
Yeah, I remember as you're talking, two things come to mind. One I'll ask in a minute, but this just came to mind while you were speaking. I remember a scene in Ben-Hur where he's in the tent of, remember the guy with the four white horses, the chariot horses that he right. finally raced? Yeah. And you remember Balthazar, who was one of the wise men, as he walked out of the tent for the evening, the Arab prince said, it's too bad that all men don't think the way Balthazar does, but until then, we must keep both of our sides of our swords sharp. And that's probably very, very true. Do you think people are born good instincts or bad, or is it just something that's learned either way as they grow up?
You know, that's so hard for me, basically, because I would have answered this so differently before I got my master's in psychology, only because now I think more like a scientist and not like this sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say disillusioned, but more, you know, more of an open person. There's something called qualia, and it's a term used in philosophy to refer to an individual's subjective consciousness, the state of consciousness where a person is aware of themselves and of the outside factors in their environment. You know, why did humans, you know, why did we evolve into feeling and thinking animals? There has to be a reason why. I do believe, you know, there are philosophers who believe that we are born naturally benevolent. And then, you know, nature, nurture. We're born into an environment and then we get strapped with all of this crap from the environment. The first 5 years of our lives, literally, we're in the, you know, delta state, which is the sleeping state of our brainwaves. And that's the state where we, as children, are like sponges, taking in everything around us. We're literally just absorbing everything. And then all of these things go into our working brain circuitry. And over time, it just gets stored in the, you know, subconscious mind. And we're doing things that we don't even know we do. And that's what's so scary, is that there are people that are doing things, they don't even know they're doing it. And how do we compete? You know, I mean, how do we navigate that? People that are just dark. That's, you know, it's not an easy answer for sure. I think it starts with ourselves.
We're talking to Michelle Brunetti. She is a conscious living coach. Gary Allen with you here on The Express. We're so happy you could take the time to join us here tonight. let's talk, you know, there's so many different things that we're going to talk about as the evening progresses. Let me get into something here, something that I told you on the phone the other day. And that is a word that I used just a few minutes ago. And that is the word called respect. It seems like it's lost completely in our consciousness. It seems like it's easier to tell a lie. It's easier to blame it on the Twinkies. It's easier to blame it on somebody else. You know, prejudice to me, whether it's homophobic prejudice or prejudice against a person for their religion or whatever country they come from, you know, for years and years and years, it was a prejudice in this country against blacks, a prejudice against this one. I've always thought your anger and your prejudice is usually coming from a place because you're inadequate or you were too lazy to do something about it. So you're blaming them for what you're not. And I'm Jewish. And everybody out there, you know, Jews, we've been blamed for everything under the sun since the beginning of time. And, you know, it's just that a lot of Jewish people worked very hard to get where they are. A lot of Polish people did. A lot of Italian people did. People from all ethnic backgrounds. But there's always that group of people, the Klan, people like that, these lazy, good-for-nothing nobodies who have accomplished nothing in life, and they blame everybody for what they don't have because they were too lazy to get off their butt. Is that another issue that you see as far as raising children? There's another bad example, no respect for anybody else and blaming somebody else for the fact that you don't have what they have, but that's because you were too lazy to go get it.
You know, being a parent, I think that I, and have having raised, getting ready to be an empty nester and send both daughters off to college, I think that, and I'm really lucky because my kids are such amazing people. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we forget and what we don't want to look at, especially parents, is that we don't want to take responsibility for what we put out there that our kids absorb. Whether or not, and you know what, it sometimes a parent cannot be spewing the kind of things that, you know, make a child believe a certain thing, but they're not watching their children and they're leaving them with people that are. They're letting them watch television or watch shows and using that as a babysitter. I mean, come on, parents. Really and truly, your children become a reflection of what you put into their lives as children. You can't blame a child for absorbing and being in a brain state where they are absorbing everything around them. Take some responsibility. Be culpable for what you have not done to, you know, create these human beings. I do believe as a scientist that there are people that have, you know, biologically nature has wired their brains where something is missing, something's askew. And I get that. But I'm going to say that that's a very small, you know, those outliers are not the majority of people. So we fall back onto parents. We fall back onto the responsibility of the people that are around our children and we as the caretakers of them.
Mm-hmm. How did, you know, I asked you earlier, how did you become a conscious living coach? What were the steps that you had to go through? If there's someone out there who is listening to you and saying, hey, that sounds like something interesting I'd like to get into, what were the steps you had to go through to get where you are at the moment?
You know, the best way that I can sum up that question, Gary, is by saying that it's been a long process. Mm-hmm. I've always believed that we can't give what we don't have. And for a long time, I did not have a strong core relationship with myself. Thus, not much to give others. That's probably why I was such a good actress. I could brilliantly play any role other than myself. Being me meant that I had to own the pain from my childhood, and it was simply too hard. After I left the business, I decided to utilize my journalism degree and began interviewing country artists. That's when I met the ex and embarked on the greatest chapter of my life, being a mom. As my kids got older and my marriage slipped away, I decided to go back to college and to get my MA in psychology. And it was there that I began researching psychology, sociology, you know, the whole litany of things that you had, you know, mentioned. Mm-hmm. And during this journey, the light bulbs began going off like crazy. And I began to create the theory of myself moving beyond my biology to live a more conscious life. And, you know, what basically, what is that? Well, I guess my program is individualized for everybody, each client, but the core tenets are grounded in meditation and mindful motivation. I know you're thinking, what is that, mindful motivation? It's like, is that just like some new age lingo? I think it's basically just a fancier word for pep talk. You know, we have to learn to change the negative self-talk that keeps us stuck in unhappiness. And that begins with becoming aware of the words we say to ourselves and then mindfully changing them. And my own transformation, it began with practicing meditation every day and reprogramming my thoughts. I changed my thoughts and I changed my mind and it changed my life. As I mentioned, the first 5 years of our lives, you know, we're learning. We're like sponges absorbing everything, good and bad. And that becomes part of the working brain circuitry. The problem with this is that we don't ever know, you know, what negative thoughts are looping around in the backdrop of our mind. Knowing this helps us to understand why we become stuck in negative and self-sabotaging thinking. Through meditation, we can reach the subconscious mind and reprogram the negative thoughts that keep us stuck and unhappy, and most importantly, trapped in the past.
Interesting. We are talking to Michelle Brunetti. She is a conscious living coach. Gary Allen with you here on The Express. Isn't that against the human nature of most all of us, change? We're reticent about change. We resist it. We fight it. And what you're talking about doesn't happen overnight. Those thoughts don't change overnight. It takes time. It takes practice. It takes a willingness to devote time to that. Excuse me. And it goes against the grain of who we are as human beings, because I would imagine negative thoughts are, and I don't know, you know, you're learned at this. I'm not. I'm a layman at this. Because as an actor, you and I both were actors out in LA at pretty much about the same time. But most actors, I wrote this note down as you were talking, most actors are conscious of acting, but not really of themselves 100%. I've met more insecure people in show business than I've ever met outside of politicians in my life.
Absolutely.
And, other than high school and the in crowd and the kids that put you down and the bullies, which we're going to get to later. You know, I mean, the most insecure people I've ever met are politicians and show business people.
Absolutely. I'm not going to disagree, because I was in the thick of Hollywood, you know, way back, hashtag me too. And I dealt with a lot of insecure people on both ends. It's a lot of beautiful people, a lot of famous people that were extremely screwed up. And what I can tell you is, after I left Hollywood and I did my thing, I came back and I started to create a program to work with actors, you know, to not just teach them how to act, because I mean, I had some of the best training in the world. I could teach someone how to act, but I wanted to teach them how to live. I wanted to teach them the importance of having balance, you know, a fusion of who they are versus, you know, who they are as a character, and being able to delineate between those two. Because, you know, the problem I think for myself as an actor, and also for other actors that I, you know, hung around with over the years, is that there's this, because there's so much insecurity and not really developing who we are as humans, we become this character. And then when that character is done, we don't know how to find our way back to ourselves. There's no, you know, there's no balance. So by teaching actors how to, you know, have a really healthy core relationship with themselves, they can separate, you know, who they are from the business and say, this is me, this is my character, and this is, you know, and have a very clear line in the sand.
I think that's key. Yeah, I think that that happens, Michelle, as an actor grows, as he matures, not only as the person, but as in their roles. I think when you're young, although a lot of young actors today are pretty mature, but I think that we all kind of walk through life with a little bit of stepping in the quicksand from time to time, and we're a little insecure. You know, when I was at the Groundlings, that's what they taught us. You know, your insecurities, work off them, you know, play off them, keep feeding and keep moving forward. as you were talking again, I kept thinking to myself, you know, about some of the people that I've known over the years that were highly insecure. But then I also remember a lot of actors like Bob Saget. Bob knew who he was. Kevin Costner knew who he was when we were going to school together. I remember sitting down once with Carol Burnett at Pink's, and I know you know where that is.
Absolutely.
The hot dog place off of La Brea. But yeah, I remember sitting and talking to her, and she said the trick is to be nice and to be polite to people. And she knew who she was. And I said to her, I said, are all the actors out here extremely insecure? She said, to one extent or another. She said, some are more than others. And most of it has to just do with their performing. You know, when you're putting something out there in an art form, I think insecurity kind of pops in. But here's something interesting as you were talking. I actually ran into a couple of people that I went to high school with many, many years ago. I mean, 20, 25 years ago. Back when I was doing Hill Street Blues and St. Elsewhere and a few other shows out in Los Angeles. I went home to spend some time with my mom and dad, and they were up there in age, so we went to dinner early. And I mean, we're talking 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we went to the early bird special. I think this was the early bird before the early bird. And ran into a girl, she went to high school with me, she wouldn't give me the time of day. But because she saw me on television, now all of a sudden she gave me her phone number, asked her to call me. I said, I'm only in town for a few days, and if you'll notice, I have a wedding ring on. I mean, that kind of thing drives me crazy, that people disrespect you back here, but then when they think you're somebody, oh, they want to get to know you right away. And I think that's another form of maturity that doesn't come along very often either.
Yeah, I think that's a good segue into this idea that, you know, there are, you know, this is a different generation of quote-unquote stardom, you know, basically because of social media. Now all you have to do is do a nude video, you know, a sex video, or, you know, get followers, and suddenly you're catapulted into all of this fame. And right. It's weird to me. You know, back in the day, back with old movie stars, you know, people worked. They earned their dues. They were able, you know, they spent a lot of time in theater, you know, working their way up and finally getting cast into a movie and then, you know, it's a process. There's no process anymore. Now it's just so easy to become famous. And I think that so many of these people are not prepared for it. And I think that's why we see so much, you know, so many issues with these young people that are ODing, committing suicide, you mm-hmm. know, all the other unfortunate things that happen to people that really aren't prepared for that kind of sudden success, especially when they're young.
Yeah.
And they're just developing that prefrontal cortex and don't really have a very clear idea of who they are yet.
True. Very true. We're talking to Michelle Burdetti. She is a conscious living coach here on The Express. Gary Allen with you. I know when I lived in L.A., the Kardashians and all this other mishigosh that's going on right now wouldn't be tolerated for 5 minutes. Of course, we didn't have the tabloid. We didn't have the social media back then either, but it wouldn't be tolerated. And as you said, do one nude movie. Well, back in the day, if you did that, you were finished. You couldn't do anything. I remember, I'm sure it's the same out there now. And how your daughters got through, God bless. I'm sure it's because of your stabilized home life and who you are and instilling good moral values in them. But, you know, there are people that come into Hollywood every week and they think they're going to become stars. They're going to become this, they're going to become that. And either some of them go right away, go home, some of them stick it out and maybe get married and have normal lives. And then there's the seedy side of Hollywood, that's the porn industry. And, you know, there is a lack of self-esteem. Either that or your ego is so far bent, you got to be a star and it doesn't matter how you get there. Talk about your two daughters briefly. I know they're going off to college. You don't have to mention any names, but living out there and living where you do, How was it for them growing up? Were they pretty well grounded? And I'm sure the answer is yes, because
I did not raise my kids. Let me just say, I didn't raise my kids in Hollywood. I did not raise them in Los Angeles. I raised my kids in the South. And when I left Hollywood and I ended up working in the country music industry, I ended up raising my kids on a ranch. And mm-hmm. we had animals, and they did not come to Los Angeles until 7 years ago. One was in middle school, one was in high school, and they actually both were cast on a reality show for high school students. It was, you know, quite a big social media show. And they had a short stint in that life, and they just hated it. They were not raised in an environment where they needed to have all this attention and didn't, you know, they were secure enough in themselves. It was a great experience. It sort of solidified to them what they didn't want to do in life. And I was really proud of them that they stepped away and just said, ew, you know, who wants this life? It's just yuck. It's different now in this generation being in the business. And I would not, for any amount of money, want to be in the business today with all of the crap that you have to deal with the paparazzi, with social media, with, you know, it's just, it's sad. It's so sad to me. It's such a septic tank here in Hollywood. And I'm sorry that I'm saying that, because for many, many years, you know, I was, acting was my life, and I was part of Hollywood, but it has changed exponentially. And I can't even imagine being a young person trying to come up in this industry.
Yeah. It is brutal. Michelle, how do people get a hold of you on your website and everything, if they want to contact you and talk to you?
You can either, you know, I've got lots of writing that I do, especially for parents, and I can talk about that later. But just theconsciouslivingcoach.com. And basically it's just a, you know, it's kind of a bare-boned website. Mostly, I hope that people just will reach out for a free consultation. I do a free 30-minute consultation, no obligation whatsoever, just to see if, you know, if I resonate, if they resonate, if I can, you know, and even if, to me, if I spend 30 minutes with someone and never talk to them again, and I had planted a seed for somewhere else, I'm happy. You know, I'm at the end of the day, I'm just trying to, you know, impart my passion for helping people to be, I feel, as happy as I am, as happy as anybody could be in this crazy world, but be able to feel stable and to balance and to finally feel comfortable in my own skin, you know, and to love myself. It's a powerful, wonderful, wonderful thing.
Yeah, you
not
know,
so easy finding a mate that feels the same way.
No.
I haven't found him yet. There's a unicorn out there wandering around that, you know,
wants to be conscious. You never know, Michelle. He could be on the other end of this phone call. You never know.
I need Elmo. Give me an
Elmo. Elmo always there for Michelle. Yeah.
Michelle, you talk about what is the power of you. What is the power of you?
Well, I think that it's all about how to learn to live more consciously. You know, we live consciously one thought at a time. Living a conscious life is a natural process. It asks us to select only the most positive thoughts. It's a willingness to shed the negative ones, you know, that's been keeping us stuck. As a species, you know, we must not only embrace the magnificent people that we are and our friends and family, but also the magnificence of the men and women living both across the street and across the world. On a very primal and basic level, we're all connected, you know, by a kind of universal glue. So to say that poverty or genocide in another part of the world doesn't affect us, it's a misconception. You know, this them and us mentality keeps us separate and disconnected from one another. And I think that's what keeps us all unhappy. It's easy to forget that we're all in this together, and that each of us is a small but integral part of the bigger picture, regardless of who or, you know, what part of the world we live in. Yeah. So for me, the power of you is like the core tenet of living a conscious life is learning to release judgment from our lives, because the act of comparing ourselves to others, it separates us and it inhibits us from, you know, becoming the people that I think that we're meant to be. I try to teach people that meditation is fluid. It's, you know, so many people are intimidated with the concept of meditation. They resist it. And in my own experience, I pushed past the traditional concept of meditation and created a ritual that was personal, that I felt comfortable with. I guess you could say that meditation is my Prozac. It's changed everything for me, healing me, transforming me, into the person that I'd become. And, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm still this, you know, sort of work in progress. But meditation, you know, mindful motivation, that idea of a pep talk, has given me this place every day, Gary, that I go to 10, 15 minutes in the morning that I can recalibrate myself for the day. I can set the tone. It's like a huge chalkboard that's empty. And I write my story. I don't give my power away. And throughout the day, when I feel myself, you know, backsliding into negative thinking or letting people push my buttons or becoming a people pleaser, all the other crap that we all do that we don't realize, I have tools, that the tools that I teach others how to stop. You know, there's like that, you know, when there's a fire, stop, drop, roll. For me, when there's a negative thought, you know, it's like stop, you know, drop the negativity and then change it immediately. Put in something positive. So like imagine a huge stop sign and you stop the negative thought right in its tracks and you change it. And that's how you change things. You do it systematically with a plan. You don't just say, oh, tomorrow, you know, I'm going to work on, you know, being happier. I'm not going to be so controlling. You know, the things that we do that are negative are it's, in a way, it's a positive thing because our bodies are finding a way to adapt to a situation. And when we can find that kind of compassion for ourselves, you know, and understand that the negative things were, you know, not, were done initially by our bodies to protect us, then we can say, hey, thanks, body. But you know what? I don't want this anymore. I want to do it this way now. I want to feel differently about this. I don't want to react this way anymore. Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. You know, I get on my soapbox here.
That's okay. That's okay. We're talking to Michelle Brunetti. She is the Conscious Living Coach. You're on The Express with Gary Allen here. Is there a book in the offing here?
Yes. I've been, you know, but the problem is that it keeps changing, gosh darn it. You know, it's like I get to where I know what I'm going to do, and then I change, and then I create this like brand new path that I start going on, and I'm like, the voices say, it's just not time yet, because I don't want to write a book that's going to end up for 99 cents, you know, on the bargain thing. I know there are a lot of people that are serial writers, and, you know, some people, especially in the self-help industry, some people nail it. And then other people don't. And if I don't feel like I'm writing something that really will make a change, will be pioneering, then I don't want to do it. Maybe that, you know, that's just how I feel about it. So, yes, I am working on this power of you, moving beyond, you know, biology. And I've been working on it for the last year or so. And I'm... Well, I guess I'll write it when it's time.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. I want to now kind of move in another direction. You've done a lot of writing on blogging and stuff. And in one position that you have is the positive side to negative thoughts. And I just want to read this here real quickly. Compassion and forgiveness are the keys to releasing our outdated paradigms of thinking. That's why compassion and forgiveness are the core tenets of conscious living. There are habits and behavioral patterns within all of us that we may perceive as negative. However, it is important to understand that a positive intention resides beyond these negative neural networks. Talk about the compassion and forgiveness as far as how you work with your patients.
Clients,
patients. Yeah, in my case, when you're talking to me, it's a patient. I'm a patient.
I don't know. I think that if you can kind of break it down to biology, you know, and what I was just, you know, talking about a few minutes ago about how we perceive some of our negative, like being controlling, right? Maybe you're that person that always wants to pick the movie. I know I'm a control freak and I'm not proud of it, but it is part of the makeup of my childhood and how I survived it. And I know a lot of people that are control freaks who have been environments, you know, as children, that survival was based on, you know, being able to control what you could in the environment. That's how you survived if you were in an environment that was, you know, not healthy or stable. And when we look at this sort of whole negative thing about ourselves on a biological level, we realize that we're organisms. And as organisms, when we sense that something might hinder our survival, we seek out a solution. It's like if you put two cells, which are living, breathing organisms who can reproduce, who can, you know, pass memories on to their offspring. Our bodies are full of billions of cells. If we put them, two cells in two different, you know, trays, and put a stressor, you know, something, you know, that threatens them in one and food in the other, what happens? They will gravitate to the food, to things that will, you know, are based on survival, and they will repel from anything negative. And so on a biological level, if something hinders our survival, we seek out a solution. And the end result may not always be perceived as positive, but the initial motivation behind it was. So you might still be like, what are you talking about? Well, these behaviors that we enable, you know, label negative, for example, being controlling, are a way of adapting to an emotional situation. So we do this to comfort ourselves, to survive. And we may hate that we're controlling, but, you know, if you look at it from a positive point of view, our body was just simply trying to protect us in a situation that it felt threatened. By learning this and understanding this, Gary, we can find a compassion and forgiveness for ourselves instead of constantly beating ourselves up for all of our character defects and our flaws. And that's how we can move into a more positive, you know, mindset.
Could it be said that we spend as a human being too much time looking back at what we should have done, could have done, and the mistakes we made, instead of just learning from them, moving on, and making our lives more positive, and forgiving ourselves and having compassion and forgiveness for others as well?
Absolutely. And that's one reason why I chose to not become a psychiatrist or a psychologist, because I don't want to work with people that ruminate to the point where they have such, you know, weak egos that they are stuck being, you know, not able to move forward. I work with people that are already successful that might have some issues of moving beyond that, teaching them to be more conscious. But for the most part, you know, when we are spending all of our time looking in the rearview mirror, which not to say that we shouldn't look back to see where we're, you know, in order to move forward, but if we're spending all of our time looking behind us, how the hell are we ever going to go forward? You know, we have to at some point in our lives say, you know what? It's done. It's over. And that's what I teach people, is to live in the now. And when you find yourself looking back in the mirror, you stop yourself and you stay right in that moment. You say, enough, no. And you focus on the positive. And that's where the mindful motivation comes in. And that's, you know, how you learn that is through meditation, by taking the time to figure out who you are as a human being, as a spiritual being, and becoming comfortable and letting go of the things that have been hindering you, and forgiving yourself and making a decision to move forward and not be stuck ruminating forever in the past.
So in other words, getting rid of the negative behavior, the bad habits, etc., which, as you say here in one of your passages, we must stop labeling our habits and behaviors as bad or negative. That, you know, we've got to let go of all of that in order to move forward, so we can get into the conscious me living today.
Absolutely. You know, we have to, once again, you know, it's okay to look back. Looking back can be very reflective. You know, we don't know how to move forward if we don't know where we came from. And I really believe in that. I'm not bashing any kind of therapy, you know, or anything that is reflective. But at some point, you know, we just have to get off the pot, you know, and, and either stay stuck, you know, or move on. And we do that, once again, by, you know, I'm like a broken record when I talk about this, but, you know, for many years, many, many years, I was very stuck I was a brilliant actress because I was so messed up psychologically. I was, my childhood just made me this like treasure trove of neuroses that I could play these incredibly raw roles. But when I was off stage, I was a hot mess. I didn't know who I was. I was lost, you know, and bad relationships. And finally, you know, part of it might be maturation, having children, I don't know. But a big part of it was when I made the decision that I was just, I was going to change and I was going to figure it out. And I, for many years, Gary, I tried lots of different things, ashrams, yoga, you know, you name it. And finally, this program that I've created, you know, it worked for me. That's the only reason that I'm trying to teach it to others, because it worked for me. And if I can change this complete, you know, this childhood of chaos and a life of making bad decisions and come to a place where I feel good and healthy and strong and balanced, then of course I want to pass that on to other people and try to help people find that for themselves.
We're talking to Michelle Brunetti. She is the conscious living coach. You can get a hold of her at consciouslivingcoach.com. She's written numerous articles. I found a bunch of them that you have, and I can't remember exactly where I went to get them. But one of the things I want to talk about here on The Express, Gary Allen with you, in the time, we got about 15, 20 minutes left, is some of the blogs that you have written, and some of them are absolutely excellent. I downloaded five, but we're only going to probably be able to get to one, maybe two. And that is when the class bully is your sweet angel at home, because you and I talked about that, about bullying today, because I brought it up because of somebody who is in the political limelight who is nothing but a bully and blames everybody for everything. And some of the signs of it are quite interesting. But what does a parent do when they finally have to come to realize that the bully that they've been hearing about is their own child, whether it be a male or a female?
I think, you know, bullying is it's a serious matter, you know, and parents have to address it immediately. It's not about you. It's not, you know, to sit around and to say, this is not my child, it's not happening, you know, to be in complete denial, or to go the other way and, you know, and beat yourself up. It's not productive. You know, if a child, if people are telling you that your child is bullying somebody, this is something that has to be addressed. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get help immediately for your child, because they have a much greater chance of learning more appropriate ways of healing, you know, of handling their feelings and dealing with peer pressure and conflict if they get some kind of help. Mm-hmm. I see so many, I remember, you know, when my kids were going to school, there were, and I substituted for at least 12 to 15 years when my kids were growing up, so I could keep an eye on my kids. And lo and behold, thank God, because there was an instance with one of my children where, you know, I was substituting and I was talking about my daughter, my sweet angel, right? Mm-hmm. This is what the motivation behind this article. And one of the, a couple of the children said, oh no, you know, she did this, she did that. I was like, what? No, this is fake news. There's no way that my child is doing these things. And so when I got involved, what I found out is that these two girls were bullying my daughter into saying bad words to their, you know, to boys, to doing, you know, getting in trouble. And she, when I finally came to her and got involved with the school, she broke into tears. She was so relieved. And she said, Mommy, these girls were making me do this. And they told me that if I didn't do it, that they would tell everybody and nobody would be my friend. And, you know, had I not been involved in the school and with my kids, I may not have been able to have seen that. And could my daughter have been in one of those kids that got pushed to kill themselves? You know, it happens every single day. Mm-hmm. So parents, you know, you need to listen to what people are telling you. You cannot be in denial about the fact that your sweet child might be acting out in a way that's not productive, that's, you know, that's unhealthy. Right. And do something about it.
Right. Well, you write down here, and I found this list fascinating. You know, a list of things that are that bullies do. Lack of empathy and compassion for other feelings. Huh. Acts out in frustration, anger, or depression. Wants to be in control. Are quick to point the finger at others and avoid responsibility. Come from families where parents or siblings bullied. Has undeveloped social skills. May suffer from some form of mental illness. Now, we weren't going to get political tonight, but boy, that sounds like soupy sales in the White House. I'm telling you. It does. It sounds just like soupy sales. It's sitting there in the White House today. But more than anything else, do you find when you talk to parents, some parents will, no matter what's proven to them beyond a shadow of a doubt, oh, no, it's their fault that my son, again, you know, a lot of bullies to me come from families where the mother or the father is a bully. And, you know, instead of taking the responsibility, you know, like I got in trouble a couple of times in high school and my father, first thing come out of his mouth was, okay, what did you do, Gary? Instead of saying, well, whose fault was it besides you? Parents today are like, okay, it wasn't my kid's fault. It's somebody else's fault. They made him do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's not always true. It's, yeah, it's not today. It's always been. Yeah.
No, it's not today, because when my daughter was in that scenario, and here I am, this California person that wants to be more conscious and be more, you know, communicate with the other parents involved. Mm-hmm. These parents started calling me and harassing me and, you know, telling me that I was crazy Californian. And, you know, it made sense. It was very telling to see how they responded. Had it been the reverse and it was myself and, you know, my daughter was bullying and terrorizing somebody, mm-hmm. I would have been the first to rally around, you know, everybody. I would have rallied around the children that were the victims. I would have rallied around my own child. I would have, you know, gotten involved with the school and said, what can, you know, look at this is happening. What can we do, you know, to make it better for everybody? But that's just not the mentality for many kids whose parents, you know, don't want to face the fact that their kids are bullies.
Yeah.
They don't want to see it. Because it's natural to them because they're bullies, I guess.
You also state in this article, chaptered or called Analyzing Your Relationship with Your Child, that sometimes bullying is a cry for help.
Yeah, definitely. Well, especially, you know, that's, we have to ask ourselves, you know, what are we doing to alienate ourselves from our children? What are we doing that they feel the need to go out and harm other people, be disrespectful to them? And, you know, I speak so much about this idea of core relationships, because when you as a parent love yourself, when you respect people, when you have compassion and you show that to your children by the things that you do every day. I remember one Christmas, you know, I took my kids Christmas morning. We always ripped open presents, you know, and did the whole Christmas thing. One Christmas, I said, guess what? We're going to go feed homeless people. And I took them out around where we live and we went and dropped off baskets to people. And it was the most illuminating thing for them to see what they had versus what other people didn't have. And that kind of compassion is, you know, it's priceless, Gary, to teach our children the value of other people besides ourselves and creating a relationship with our children where they can ask, you know, what can I do for others? Not just what can I get for myself. That's hard in this day and age. Trust me.
Yeah.
It's a hard one.
I remember something my grandfather told me, my father told me, and even a couple of my older siblings once said growing up, because we were raised in a house of non-judgment, non-prejudice, non-everything, just accept people for who they are. And if a person of color hurts you, then it's just that person. It's not the entire race. But I also think back on when people judge other people and they judge them harshly. I always think, try walking in their shoes for a while and see why maybe they have retaliated about this. Or, you know, I was thinking about this because, you know, I've been going through some hard times here the last few years or so. And I keep thinking, my God, the people that are born into hard times and they never can get out of them. Imagine what's going through their brain. I can get out of this situation, and slowly but surely I am. But, you know, the poor people who can't get out of it, And I don't mean poor. I just mean people who can't get out of their situation. It's got to be horrible. So before I say anything about anybody, I think about, you know, what would it be like for me to walk in somebody else's shoes? And that helps me kind of round out the day a little bit. We've got about 2-3 minutes here in the program. We've been talking to Michelle Brunetti. She is the ConsciousLivingCoach.com. Go to her. Talk to her, please. She'll give you free counseling. She's wonderful. She's absolutely beautiful inside and out. It emanates when you see her picture, when you talk to her on the phone. She's just really a wonderful person, and I'm glad that she and I have become friends over a short period of time because, boy, I need some help. But what's the one thing that you'd like people to take away from all of this tonight?
You know, I think that even if you – spirituality or growth is kind of like planting a seed. You know, we may want it, but the time may not be right. And until it's time for our souls to awaken, you know, we might struggle and go on and feel like we are stuck in our lives. But I'm here to tell you that at any single moment of your life, you can change. And, you know, if you want to change bad enough, you can change. And it's really, you don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars. You don't have to go to 1,400 seminars. I'm not bashing any of these famous, you know, life coaches. But the reality is they make money, you know, keeping you stuck and hoping you'll keep coming back. I don't want people to be stuck. I want people to learn fairly quickly how to move on. And it's really not that difficult. You're right. It does take work. We have to be willing to put the work in. For how many years we've been on this planet, you know, we have to figure that it's going to take some time to undo some of the negative damage that has been perpetrated against us and that we've continued to just sort of keep feeding, you know, over the years.
Yeah.
So what I would say to people is, if not me, you know, if nothing else, I would love for you to understand that meditation is not what everyone thinks it is. It doesn't have to be sitting there, you know, saying om, you know, or going into a trance. Meditation is a state that you create, a private time in your life every day that you could spend going into a subconscious state and reprogramming your thoughts, giving yourself a pep talk, learning to love yourself, heal your cells and the body because your cells have memories. If you're unhappy and your negative thoughts are constantly bombarding your body, guess what? Your cells are taking that in. Your cells are reproducing, and those baby cells are coming out with this idea that we're sick, we're negative, we're unhealthy, you know, we're bad, we're controlling, nobody loves me, I'm going to be poor forever, I'm never going to get where I want to get. And I'm telling you that that's just not, it's fake news. That, you know, that's the only thing I've taken out of this administration. Sadly, the only thing I've taken out of this administration is the word fake news, which I will probably use the rest of my life.
Yeah,
unfortunately. Because I do like that saying.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But we've been talking to Michelle Brunetti. She is the conscious living coach. Go to ConsciousLivingCoach.com and contact her. Please do so. The only thing I could add to that before we close out tonight is just respect. Watch what you say to each other because words can hurt and words can really change someone's life, good or bad, and it's much nicer to be nicer. So with that said, Michelle, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on The Express. It has been a real pleasure and an honor to have you on board. And to all of you out there, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us as you do every Thursday night. We'll be back next week with another show. And until then, please take care of yourselves and each other.
You've been listening to The Express with Gary Allen. Join us here every Tuesday night at 10 for more captivating talk with Gary Allen. See you next time on The Express.